Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party, the only podcast that takes you through the back catalogue of A24 films, two films at a time, every fortnight. I'm your co-host Dallas King, and with me as always is Lee Hutchison. How are you this week?
Yeah, really glad to be back.
Good, good. So on today's episode, we're reviewing Morris from America and The Sea of Trees. But first of all, it is a time for A24 Hour News. First up on the news is The Midsummer Murders. And this is news that Midsummer has finally reached cinemas. We are going to be reviewing this one, of course, in a future episode of the A24 Project, but and in full on this week's filibuster. But for now, Lee, can we just give us a little tease of your reaction to what you experienced in the cinema this week?
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about this film. I think it shares a lot in common with Hereditary, but also at the same time, there's nice divergence where I think whether you loved or disliked Hereditary, I think there's often been debate about sort of that last stretch of the movie. Is that something that comes out of nowhere? Does it work? Whereas I think this film takes a different route, and I think we get the film that we expect to get from watching sort of the trailers and perhaps our insight into sort of films in this genre. And I think that's a good thing, actually. It really builds a tension and ill ease sort of through the whole runtime. And I thought it sort of 2 hours, 26 minutes, that I was going to get a bit of a numb bum at some point. But I think this film absolutely flies through and presents us with some fantastic imagery and brilliant score. And I'm desperate for an art book of this film. The set design, production design of this film is excellent. And I cannot wait to discuss it in a future episode.
I know, yeah, this film, for me, I think Hereditary is still higher for me, but I think, I mean, this film has some imagery which I'm not going to forget in a long, long time. And I want to go back and see it again to actually pay attention to. I find myself just wanting to look at the walls of the barn that they were staying in, because essentially the entire movie is painted on the walls. And what I love about it is, like you say, is similar to, you know, apparently the director wasn't wanting the Wicker Man to be an influence, but I mean, it clearly is. I mean, you know, there's no getting away from it. You can kind of see, you know, that this film is not going to end well for most, if not all, the people involved. And I like the way that it does follow through on that in some rather grotesque ways, but it keeps the tension alive of, you know, like you say, this is 2.5 hour long film, but it does not feel like that. You are never bored, and it takes its time and it builds it up to these moments of pure cathartic sort of horror and grotesqueness. But it also was, I found, really quite darkly funny in places as well, which I was not expecting. Especially, you know, that it's dealing with this woman who's got this horrendous loss and she's not being supported by her boyfriend. And it's, you know, this sort of grief, sort of horrible sort of breakup movie, but it was really actually quite funny in places. And, you know, I expect many, many memes to come out with the fact that Chidi from The Good Place ends up in the bad place in this film.
Yeah, I think this film is going to generate, once this film hits Blu-ray, like the GIFs are going to come, the screen caps are going to come, and the memes are definitely going to kick in. I think already this film has produced some fantastic content online, including a Letterboxd list, which I think we feel that we could add to, where it's like, they put what in a pie? Yeah, this is a film I'm desperate to go into more detail on.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen already people sort of mash cutting this trailer with the trailer for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again and stuff like that. So, I mean, this is going to be a film which is just going to keep on giving in terms of memes and GIFs whenever if there is a spoiler embargo up, you know, where some people seem to respect movies a lot more, you know, they don't, you know, immediately spoil it. Whereas, you know, something like Stranger Things, within a day, people were spoiling the ending of and putting up memes and GIFs for everything and stuff like that. But it seems with movies, people seem to have a slight better respect of. I don't know, it's like Stranger Things. If you haven't binged the entire series in the first 12 hours, then it's fair game. But, you know, with something like this, it's nice to see people are holding back from getting into the juicy details until a little bit down the line. But, yeah, no, this is going to be a lot of fun to discuss.
Yeah, not everyone needs to treat it like they have a podcast to review this A24 films and have to wait 3 years to get round to it. You know, people can discuss it in about a week or two time. I'm sure that's when all the spoiler chat will begin.
Absolutely. So next on the news is a little bit of a mystery, and it's the A24 public access. Now, this was tweeted out by the A24 account a couple of weeks ago, and initially I was thinking, well, this probably must be a streaming service because everyone and their uncle's got a streaming service coming out. But I did a little bit of digging on the internet, and someone's come up with a rather interesting theory that it's not a streaming service because, you know, they have less than 100 films, so they've got a limited amount of content. You know, Mubi goes with, you know, sort of 31 films available every month, but they do it on a rotational basis. But someone's kind of worked out that the tweet had all these different film titles along with numbers in terms of locations and dates. And they believe that certain films from their back catalogue, such as Lady Bird, Spectacular Now, Good Time, and The Witch and Moonlight, are actually going to get free public screenings in the places that inspired them. So Lady Bird will screen in Sacramento on the 20th of July. Good Time will screen in New York on August the 10th. And Moonlight will screen in August 24th in Florida. So I like the fact that someone's basically gone and dug into this. So whether this is true or not, it's yet to be officially announced by A24, but keep an eye on their Twitter feed. So what do you make of that news?
Yeah, my immediate reaction was, oh my God, there's an A24 streaming service coming, which is ideal for people like me and you that podcast on every A24 film, and we'll probably touch on later today. Some of them can be incredibly hard to find here in the UK, but I was like, it's happening. It's definitely not going to come to the UK because, you know, A24 is a thing in America. A24 here is only a thing when it becomes a film that they have produced. So, you know, Hereditary, Midsommar, Lady Bird, those films are produced by, not distributed necessarily by A24, like most of the films. They get picked up here by like Entertainment One or Film 4 or you name it. So it was never going to be a UK thing. And then when I sort of settled into it, I was like, well, it's only a few films that they're mentioning here, and then you get those coordinates. And I think in the past few days they've been putting up sort of tweets, where you see them sort of putting up these screens in these locations as well. So I think it's a really cool idea, and I'm very jealous. I would love to kind of pop to the Sacramento one perhaps to watch something like Lady Bird, or watch like Moonlight coming up soon. We could have gone to Florida to watch it there before giving our thoughts. So yeah, it's a cool idea. Not as cool as maybe initially thought of, but still a really awesome idea nonetheless.
I look forward to the eventual Midsommar screening in Sweden.
Yeah.
Maybe give that one a miss. So not much else in the way of news this week, apart from the fact that I finally, this is big news for this podcast, I finally managed to order a First Reformed cap, thanks to the fact that A24 put it back on sale and they now do international shipping. So thank you to you, Lee, for alerting me to this fact, and I guess also to the Reddit page where I think the news first broke. So hopefully by the next episode I'll be able to do a live unboxing on air of this cap. So that's good. One size fits all.
Absolutely. I think, you know, did you treat yourself to the towel as well, Dallas?
I did think about the beach towel, but I don't have any beach holidays planned this year, so I guess that maybe down the line. We'll see.
I can't imagine you in Aberdeen Beach sitting on an A24 thing, yeah, freezing to death in the north of Scotland chill.
No, sadly, it's the wrong environment for that one. And final bit of news is the fact that we are going to treat you all to a bonus episode next week. Because Lee, you've been very lucky enough to talk to the director of Ballad of Lefty Brown, Jared Moshe. So do you want to tee that one up for us?
Yeah, so here's a small preview of our podcast kind of coming next week. So we have a few more that are kind of in the pipeline to get recorded within the next sort of month. I don't want to jinx it and say who they are until they've been recorded, because then I'll end up looking like a silly asshole. But this one was a real treat. Ballad of Lefty Brown isn't coming up till a bit later, sort of in our review cycle, but I had a real pleasure talking with its writer-director for about 45 minutes, all about his sort of work on the Ballad of Lefty Brown. And he, in a previous life before being a writer-director, was a producer and a sales agent, and he shares sort of his experiences of what it's like to work with A24 to distribute a film, what they're like to interact with as a business, and it's just really interesting stuff, and I hope you guys will enjoy it too. So if you want to skip your homework for next week, you can check out American Honey, Moonlight, and The Ballad of Lefty Brown, and hopefully you'll enjoy the interview. So here's just a little preview of what's to come next week.
The film premiered at South by Southwest, and it was shortly bought up by sort of A24. What's it like when you hear someone like A24 with such a positive reputation and an excellent filmography is keen to add your film to their catalogue?
It was really exciting. They had released a Western I was a big fan of called Slow West.
Yeah, I love that one too.
Which is fantastic, such a European twist of the genre, so good. And so I was really excited when they came on board because, sometimes I think the thing about a Western is, they're not enough made that necessarily every distributor knows what to do with it. And I love those guys at A24. I've known them since I was a sales agent, multiple lifetimes ago for all of us. And, it was so cool to just have that they wanted us to be part of their brand.
What is their reputation like amongst, say, filmmakers and as you mentioned, sort of sales agents? That we have this vision of them from the outside that they do everything this way, that way, that they're so wonderful. What's it like when you're sort of within the industry as opposed to the outside and a film fan, perhaps?
Well, what's really interesting, I think, about the way A24 does things is that most distributors work in a way where they have release plans. They have like two or three just sort of standard release plans. So that we're gonna platform it. We're gonna go wide. We're gonna they have sort of two or three options. And what they do is they take your film and they look at it and go, okay, which of our two to three plans does this fit into? And they sort of shoehorn your film into it. What A24, I think, does, which is really interesting, is they look at the film and go, what is the best way to release this film? Instead of trying to force the film into one of our sort of prearranged plans, let's think about this film, let's think about what we have, and let's think about how we can best get the exposure off of it.
So there you go. So hopefully that will keep you kind of hooked in to come in next week.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm there, so can't wait to listen to the full thing when it drops. But this week we've got a couple of films to talk about, and very differing films, I think it's fair to say. I think both first-time watches for me, I'm not sure about yourself, but first up this week we have Morris from America, written and directed by Chad Hartigan, starring Marcus Christmas, Craig Robinson, Carla Jury, and Lena Keller. Now, I'm going to admit something here. When we first did this project, I looked at the title, and I have to say, I don't know how I came up with this, but I thought I was going to be watching a film about documentarian Errol Morris going around America. So imagine my surprise to find that this was actually a coming-of-age movie about a 14-year-old African-American wannabe rapper living in Germany with his dad who's teaching soccer there. So Lee, what was your first introduction to this film, and what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is one of these double bills where I had no real idea what to expect going in. I had never sort of seen them as available in sort of the UK to even kind of watch. So when I sort of checked out what Morris from America was going to be, I sort of sometimes at the beginning of a month, I rent a bunch of A24 films that I'll be watching sort of in the next month for this podcast, or maybe checking out one that is quite a bit of distance away for us in the viewing schedule, but I'm still keen to check out anyway. So this was one, even until I sort of started watching it, I knew it was sort of about a rapper. That's about all I knew. And when I went in, I was watched on a Saturday morning. I was kind of smorn with the cold, and I was just really hooked into it. I just found it such a pleasant surprise. And it's been one of these movies where there's a lot of A24 films, I think, in our first sort of 20 episodes where we've never maybe heard about them. And sometimes when you get to them, you're like, ah, there's a reason we've maybe never heard of this film. And that is not the case with this one. This was one where it was like, ah, how have I not heard about this film? I just found it to be so enjoying. Marquise Christmas, what a name, who plays Morris, I thought was so engaging. And Craig Robinson as his dad. And I loved the sort of the relationship this guy had with this kind of girl. It was one of these ones, it had elements that I've seen before in films, but I just found it so absolutely charming, captivating. And I am a sucker for movies about people that form a band or like music, for example, and that only plays a small role in this film, but I thought there was just so many elements here that just made me smile. And I thought it was a really nice coming of age film, which I think A24, as we've seen time and again, knocks out of the park.
Early on, sort of like we were talking, that I think you were like, you gave this 2 stars, and I was looking forward to chatting to you, because I was not as keen on it as you. I think on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's got an 88% critic rating but 60% audience rating, so you're clearly more in line with the critics and I'm maybe more in, I'm the audience on this one. I think there was, I don't know if it was just because I watched it sort of first thing in the morning, sort of before work or something like that, but I just wasn't as engaged with the characters and the film as you were. I think, I mean, it's a sort of a traditional story, sort of Americans abroad, sort of the coming of age aspect. You've got sort of elements of sort of 8 Mile and stuff. He's sort of getting teased, and you know, you wonder if he's actually going to be able to pull off the rapping and stuff like that. So it was nice to see that he actually was a decent rapper when he did get the chance. I was worried it was going to be, it turns out he wasn't very good, but he does actually have some skills in there. But I'm not sure if it's just me, but there's the lead girl in it who is very good. She's played by Lena Keller, who plays the sort of, it's just this, every single film that has like a muse in it these days seems to go down the automatic sort of almost famous Penny Lane sort of mode, where, you know, these people, all the guys fall in love with her and will travel anywhere to be with her, but then it turns out, you know, she's always not really the right one for them. And like you say, I mean, I think the real relationship of the film is sort of this, the bonding between the son and the father. You know, they've moved over to Germany after, you know, the mother slash wife's passing, and it's sort of about the two of them almost reconnecting. You know, he clearly doesn't want to be in Germany. His dad's doing it to get money for the family and sort of raising his career. But I think that was, I would have almost liked to have seen more of the relationship between them rather than the sort of the coming of age sort of thing, I think. But then maybe that's just a personal opinion, I think.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones that I like this one, like sort of the relationship he had with Katrine. We've sort of seen those sorts of relationships before, but I think it was just really kind of sweet. This sort of like, I liked that the character was, you know, we kind of see a lot of these kind of characters where the young 15-year-old boy is a bit of a dick, or the girl that they fancy is a bit of a bitch. But I kind of liked how they sort of, it kind of always felt realistic. Like, I think we've all maybe met a Katrine in real life. And I think sort of some of the behaviour, sort of the water pistol and how she acts and so on, is sort of probably in keeping with perhaps how many a sort of teenage girl perhaps in Germany has behaved. I say this as someone that used to have a half German girlfriend, for example. I just really liked that it didn't feel like I was watching an American teenage girl, but perhaps a European one. And I think oftentimes that we see these type of characters in these movies, they are written as like generic American kind of teenage girl. And I didn't get that feeling from this one. And I think that's maybe a testament to the writing and Lena Keller's performance.
Yeah, no, I mean, all the performances are great. I think Carla Dewey as the sort of tutor and counselor for Morris, I thought was great. She had a small role in Blade Runner 2049, and I was sort of like, I've seen this girl before, woman in before, what's it? And then I figured out it was Blade Runner. I thought she was great, and a nice sort of moral sort of center for Morris, trying to get him on the straight and narrow. I mean, I was surprised to see that the film was, given that it's an American film, the fact it was, a lot of it was in German with subtitles as well. I thought that was a bold move and an interesting choice, and I thought it actually paid off, you know, sort of forcing the audience to sort of to almost step into Morris's shoes and stuff like that, and having to adapt and feeling like an outsider in this place. I thought that was a great choice, and it's sort of certainly able to build up that wall between him and everyone else that he was sort of being with in that sort of community youth center and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I like that sort of the community sort of centre thing, and that it was one of these ones that, like, I think a more traditional film would have had, like, there's this build up to the talent show, he's going to do a rap, oh my god, this is going to be the climax of the film, and we're going to see him do this amazing rap, and everyone's going to kind of fall for him. But instead, like, the rap goes so spectacular, so badly wrong, that he comes out with this, like, I'm screwing bitches and hoes or something to a bunch of 15-year-olds. And it's like, nope, that's at the end of it. Off stage, you're banned. And it's like, most other films, I think, would have had that as the climax of their movie and it would have been a success. In this, it is just a disaster. And I like that.
Yeah, no, I love the scene with Morrison, his dad, played by sort of Craig Robinson, and his sort of how he chews him out over his awful, offensive lyrics. And it's not because they're explicit and offensive, it's because you've never fucked two bitches at once or anything like this. It's basically because he doesn't have that experience. He's like, you should be rapping about what you know about, not about all this stuff that everyone else does. You've got to be yourself if you want to be a rapper. So I like the fact that he gave him into trouble not for being rude but for basically lying in his raps and stuff like that. So I thought that was a good twist to it.
Yeah, and I think it's just a simple message that we can all take away from this film is, you know, write about, talk about, praise what you know and love, as opposed to sort of trying to be maybe someone else. And I thought that was a nice message, and it was good that I'd recently sort of, I like Craig Robinson, and I think sometimes his film choices haven't always been the greatest. I think recently sort of An Evening with Beverly Loughlin, where he basically just grunts for 3 hours and goes, "Ugh." Like, it was good to see him as, he's sort of a leading man in this. He's, you know, the single dad, and he does it well. Though I did think the German tutor for ages until I looked at IMDb was Chloe Sevigny. So I was really surprised by that. I was like, oh my god, she's got a German doppelganger.
Yeah, no, I thought, yeah, Craig Robinson was great actually in a certainly more sort of straight man dramatic role than what we've seen him in, for example, Hot Tub Time Machine and The Office and stuff like that. So it was great to see another side to him. And I think, yeah, the young kid, Marquise Christmas, is going to go places, and I think he's got a great future ahead of him, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I want to see more of these people in it, though. I did some research in it, and I couldn't seem to see much more that he's been in since, and I discovered that Lena Keller has become this, like, crazy model as well. So it sounds like they've got a really kind of... they've really grown up perhaps and stuff like that, then they're not the 15-year-olds that we saw in this film, that they've become like proper adults.
Yeah,
then.
No, it's like again with the Stranger Things references, seeing the kids between Stranger Things 2 and Stranger Things 3, it's like, oh wow, yeah, kids really do grow up these days. So it's like, yeah, no, I think a lot of the talent on this film is going to go on to do great things. And you know, we talked about this film being one which was a real sort of hidden gem and a surprise that we hadn't really heard about, and you know, we got to discover. But the next film is a film which I don't think really any of us had heard about, and it's odd because when you look at the talent involved, this should be a film that was, you know, talked about for Academy Awards, because you know, it's directed by two-time Oscar nominee Gus Van Sant. It stars Oscar winner Matthew McConaughey, Oscar winner Naomi Watts, Oscar nominee Ken Watanabe. But for some reason or another, The Sea of Trees has got lost in the woods and never really made it to our shores and stuff. Apparently, it was screened at a Cannes Film Festival to a horrendous reception. It is currently sitting with a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes from the critics, 42% from the audience. The audience seemed to like it slightly better. But it's based in part by the true story of a forest just outside Tokyo in Japan near Mount Fuji, which is known for becoming a spot for people to go and commit suicide. It also has inspired the horror film The Forest, which was out a couple of years ago as well, and that starred Natalie Dormer. And it's about a man who goes to end his life, but then ends up stopping someone else from committing suicide. And then it comes a race for survival to get out of this forest, which they have become lost in. And while they do that, we get flashbacks to his life pre The Forest, where we sort of discover the reasons for why he may be wanting to end it all. So before we get into the meat of the film and discuss that sort of side of it, Lee, what did you think of the Sea of Trees? What were your first thoughts and how did you first hear about it?
I wish I could have been in Cannes to throw a banana at the screen or a tomato. That I knew that there was a negative reaction to this film going in. And the first 5 minutes I was like, actually, I think this is going to be pretty good. Like, there's such a kind of sense of urgency. Like, we're introduced to Matthew McConaughey's character, you know, this Arthur Brennan, and he's like, I'm heading to Japan. I just want a single ticket. Have you got any luggage? No. And it's like, oh my God, it's clear that something's not right here. And then that we see that he's in this forest, this sea of trees, this notorious suicide spot. And you see the signs that, you know, think of your parents, you don't want to let them down or upset them. And it's like, okay, wow, like we're going strong here. You know, he sits down, starts popping his pills, like, here we go. This is dramatic shit happening right here. And then he sort of sees Ken Watanabe's character and it's like, it all goes downhill from there. And the film I thought we were maybe and hopefully going to get, and that the critics were wrong or the Cannes audiences were wrong, immediately became apparent that they were right. I just thought this was such a painful, cliched, boring 2 hours that we see this character's just walking around the woods for a long time with flashbacks to some real daytime TV soap opera stuff, that Matthew McConaughey's character is a love cheat and he let down his wife but then she gets terminal cancer and they sort of make up and, you know, he feels guilty and it's like, this is terrible stuff. It was, I don't know what A24 maybe saw in this film apart from the talent involved, but it was clearly they didn't see the film and then decide to invest in it. This was really poor.
Yeah, no, this was not a good film, and it's one which, you know, I guess you almost wish you could erase from your mind. And it's such an odd one because, like you say, when you look at that talent, you think, how did this go so incredibly wrong? You know, it's the kind of thing which would have probably been, you know, on paper been, oh yeah, we're going to get it released in November for an Oscar run. You know, the talent will be enough to see us through. You know, it's got deep meditations on, you know, death, guilt, love and stuff like this. And then it's just like, I realized sort of like while I was watching it, that essentially what I'm watching was a really poor remake of It's a Wonderful Life. In the fact that in A Wonderful Life, Jim Stewart's character wants to commit suicide because it's the best thing for his family and whatever. But, you know, this angel sort of comes down and sort of shows him the error of his ways, you know, what life would have been like without him. And essentially this is what happens in this film where, you know, he meets someone else in the forest and then by sort of giving him a purpose to get him out, it shows that maybe his life is worth living again. And then by going back and showing all the moments with his wife, we're supposed to sort of think, well, maybe, you know, he should live on for a memory. But the problem is that the relationship between him and his wife is so barely thinly sketched. And they're just two horrible people to each other that there is no, I felt no connection to that relationship. And even when it's like, oh no, she's got cancer, you know, she's been this awful person to him. She's an alcoholic and she berates him in public to everyone. And it's like, oh, just because I got cancer, they tried to make it work again. And then, oh no, they're trying to rekindle the relationship. And then something else happens. And it's just like, I had no desire to really see them reconnect and get back together. And for him to, yeah, it was just a terrible, you know, it's like, you know, the scenes in the forest between him and Ken Watanabe talking about life and death and stuff like that. It's like they walk a little bit, one of them falls down, they hurt themselves, they then camp out in the rain, then they camp out in a tree, and then they walk a bit more, and then like they get trapped in a river and flash floods and stuff like this. All these obstacles to getting out of the forest, and it's like, yeah, don't bother. I mean, it's just like, yeah, it was just no connection to it, and no, yeah, it was just a pretty much a washout for me, I thought.
Did you see, like, the script was on there? And I'm starting to think The Blacklist is actually not a good thing. Like, remember when we were sort of younger, that the idea of, like, oh, this script has now been adapted, it's been on The Blacklist for years, everyone talks about how great this script is, it's amazing, and now it's finally on the screen. This film was, like, considered one of the top Blacklist movies of you know, for those who aren't aware, like the Blacklist is unproduced scripts that are out there in Hollywood, and I think they make a list of them every year, which are the top ones that people would love to see in production. This film is a damning indictment of that list, if that was one of the most anticipated ones on it. I do think that there is a better film out there, and I don't know if you remember the whole Logan Paul situation, where... Yeah, he was a YouTuber who went into sort of the suicide forest, which pretty much Sea of Trees takes place in, and started filming some of the dead bodies there. And it was a whole controversial thing. He was shamed. He lost some of his fame. You know, it was the damning indictment of YouTube vloggers, etc. And I'd love to see a version of It's a Wonderful Life instead of this, with Matthew McConaughey, where he learns that maybe cheating on his wife wasn't a good idea, where we see it that it's Logan Paul that goes into the suicide forest to film it, and then he discovers the errors of his way, and he is visited by, you know, a ghost or whatever that guides him through his life and through this forest to realize that being a YouTube vlogger is actually a stupid idea, and that filming this video is going to be a terrible situation that he'll find himself in. I would rather see that. Like, this should be like an... I know, like, we've got Punch It on the Network, which looks at Star Trek and does its own twists on stories. I'd love to see an A24 version of Punch It, where they turn this film into a tale about Logan Paul.
Well, there is an A24 Twitter account called A24 Film Pictures, which just creates... It just takes random sort of combinations of things and puts them out. But I think that could be... That sounds almost like one of those ones which could get... Which could feature on that. So, yeah, no, I'd probably watch it, I think. So, do you have any other thoughts on The Sea of Trees? Or is this a film which we should take out and leave in the forest to die alone?
I think, like, we discussed this off-air earlier. Like, this was the hardest film... I think, like, you get things from libraries, different places, rentals, Blockbusters, wherever. This one was the hardest one to find for you. And I think that's quite telling about the quality of this film.
Yeah, no, it was... I couldn't find it in the UK. On Amazon, there was... You could get it from Germany, or you could get it from France or Spain or something like that. For some reason, the UK does not want this on its catalogues in DVD or Blu-ray, which is... A damning indictment, like you say, given the huge quality of talent involved. But, you know, everyone, you know, this was during the reconnaissance. You know, this was primed for greatness, but sadly, just things occasionally, I guess, just don't work out. But thankfully, I guess, I think the tide turns next week, because on the next episode, we're actually going to be joined by Meg Wilson from the Screen Themes podcast, and because we're going to be discussing Andre Arnold's American Honey and the now infamous Oscar winner Moonlight. So are you looking forward to that one, Lee? Does that cheer you up slightly? Does that give you a reason to
yeah
win?
Like, could you imagine sort of having to do something like Sea of Trees and it got lumped with sort of American Honey? That this film being inserted the way it does means that we're probably going to review in one go two of the best A24 films. And I haven't seen either since opening weekend. So I have one on rental from iTunes and the other I've just picked up on Blu-ray. So I'm so excited to check these movies out again. I loved them that year. They were high in my best of the year list. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be a real treat. And I can't wait to hear Meg's thoughts on this as well, and as well as your own.
I know, yeah. I'm looking forward to revisiting. I think I've only ever seen each one of them once as well, so I'm looking forward to revisiting them again. And, you know, this is, you know, but thankfully we don't live in that alternative universe where La La Land, you know, we could have been in that alternative universe. Well, La La Land was the Oscar winner and Moonlight wasn't, but I guess we'll get into that next week as well. So until then, Lee, if any of our listeners want to chat about A24 movies and want to pitch any bizarre A24 films to you, where can they find you?
Yeah, we can have a chat about Logan Paul on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. What about for yourself?
They can catch me on Twitter at @champcelluloid. So that brings us to the end of this episode. But always, as always, check out our other podcast, Filibuster on the Nerd Party, along with other great podcasts such as Nerd Nuptial, Missing Frames, Aggressive Negotiations, and City Alpha 3. So until next time, we'll see you then. Cheers.